Mental Talk's first Sunday roundtable debate. I'm Jerry Phillips. Eric Mickelson, Green.
Hi, Jerry. How are you this morning?
I don't know why you said there you are sitting there. Okay, Eric, good morning.
Good morning to you, too.
Thank you very much for being with us. Also, Jim Pomeli, GOP Republican. You were here last week.
Absolutely. I like to be here every week.
You left your coat in the corner.
Uh-oh.
under the G. Gordon Liddy show sign.
Now, where's the Jerry Phillips sign? That's what we want to know.
We don't put signs up. Anyway.
You're modest.
We're modest. Also, we have Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
Oh, good morning, Jerry.
And he brought his suitcase with him. And and on the line, on the campaign trail, sorry she's not here, but we love her still. Where are you, Dana?
How you doing? Good morning, Jerry. Hi, guys. How you doing? I am in the wonderful and beautiful Baltimore.
You're in Baltimore?
Maryland. Baltimore, Maryland. Maryland's second congressional district, where Dutch Rippersberger is pulling out a very substantial win here.
Yeah, well, okay. Now, are you with the Lieutenant Governor, Kennedy Townsend? I wish you'd shorten her name. You know, that's the only thing I have a problem with.
After Tuesday, we won't have to worry about that.
Oh, I see.
KKT. We can call her KKT.
I don't know. You can just slip up on that. You know?
We can call her a lot of things.
Call her a lot of things. Anyway, let's go around the table very quickly. What does the election look like to you, Nicholas? When I say, what does it look like to you, meaning there's an awful lot of talk of control of the House, of the Senate, and the outcome of this depends on the voter turnout. That's basically it in facts. What do you think?
I think that in a lot of races where people are frustrated with their incumbents and a lot of races where, you know, there's a lot of action, you'll see a good turnout. But generally speaking, the American people seem distracted again this election cycle. And in most races, I think the incumbent's just going to win. And the House and Senate will stay the way it always has because people don't get involved enough in politics.
Eric Mickelson.
One little
Green
thing,
Jerry. I think actually in Maryland the polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., I think. But the election looks like it's, I would say, for the Democrats in the House of Representatives, it looks like they could pick up 2 seats in Maryland, perhaps. I'm a little...
Where in Maryland will those 2 seats be?
District 2 and District 8, Morello's...
You think Morello's going to lose?
You know, I think at this point, that's my hunch. Mm-hmm. Although I think it looks less bright for the Democrats at the gubernatorial spot. I think, you know, especially if the weather is not great, Ehrlich looks like... I think
so you're looking at a switch-off in Maryland? Like, Ehrlich, the Republican, winning the gubernatorial, and Morello losing the...
Potentially, yeah. That's just sort of my hunch.
Swamp off.
We'll know in a couple days.
Jim Pomeli, what about this? Dana?
Let me tell you, we've been hearing a lot from Dana about how we have to, you know, how the Democrats have to fire, you know, Connie Morell, that Connie Morell has to be thrown out onto the street in the greater glory of a Democratic Congress. And as offensive as that is to me, it's also untrue. According to the Washington Post, they have their annual crystal ball competition, and they put together political experts and groups to determine what they think the makeup of the House and Senate and governors' mansions are going to be after the election. They have 12 different groups of competitors in this. 11 out of 12 predict that there's going to be a solid Republican majority in the House. 11 out of 12. So now that the Republican majority in the House is very safe, the question that voters for Connie Morella have to ask is, do you want a hardworking, moderate, you know, someone who represents their district in the Republican majority, yeah, bringing home bacon for Maryland, or do you want to elect a freshman in the minority party who, quite frankly, is just not a qualified candidate?
What I like about you, Jim, I was asking you about the total election, and you got
it's us. All this, local.
You
it's
gave
all
us, you
local.
You gave us this local commercial for, you know, the Republicans. But anyway, Dana.
Vote
Dana,
Connie.
Dana Jones is out there on the campaign trail in Baltimore. She must be tired and tethered. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. How are y'all doing? It's good to hear from you.
Dana,
I wasn't going to miss it.
I wasn't going to miss the show. One of the expressions that we hear in the press this morning, and certainly my dear friend Mr. Erickson, I mean, let me get my name straight here. Nicholas Sawalk said, what's wrong with me this one? Anyway, Nicholas Sawalk said that the status quo, it's going to be the status quo. And I'm hearing this even in an article or commentary in the Washington Post. Do you think it'll turn into a status quo?
Okay, well, let's just first talk about the races. first off, I think that when we talk about the Washington Post and all the political experts there, they also said Shriver was going to win. They didn't expect the upset that Van Hollen brought. And let's talk about qualifications real quick, and then I'll go on to the national races.
Okay, make your answers short so we can...
Van Hollen is one of the most qualified people. He is excellent. His record shows that. I think we've seen it on television. We've seen it other places. Let's go on to the national races real quick. We're picking up and we have momentum in places we were never supposed to. And when I say we, I mean Democrats. Texas 5, Ron Chapman. Maryland 2, Dutch Rippersberger. Colorado 7, Feely. Georgia 3, Marshall. Arizona 1, Cordova. I could go on and on. We have unbelievable candidates out there, and they're doing great. The wind is at our back. And again, it's all about getting people to the polls. It's about people voting. And I'm not going to sit and be negative like my friend here on the other side. But it's really about what you care about. It's, again, it's about the economy, stupid. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that are not happy with their 401k. They don't like what's happened. We've still never really done anything with Enron. And let's get this country moving. And I think by doing that, we're going to have checks and balances as our forefathers wanted. And that's putting a Democratic majority into the House.
All right. Now, let's hear from a candidate. We have a live candidate on the line this morning. I guess he's in Baltimore, too, and that is he still there? Yeah, Spiro Lancaster, who's a libertarian. Mr. Lancaster, are you there?
Yeah, the name is Spear.
Spear. I'm sorry. I have
E-A-R.
That's the producer's shouting in my ear. That's his fault. He put Spiro on here. I was going to say Spiro Agnew. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, Mr. Spear.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lancaster, let me ask you. What do you think about this election? And then you can give your pitch.
I think this election is a typical. It's been happening for 50 years. This is the standard one party with the two branches with no choices. In Maryland, you have 45 state senators. 15 are totally unopposed. 15 might as well not be opposed. People have no choices. The sort of like going to a baseball game and they announce the score before they play the game. Kind of boring.
Right. Do you think that we're going to get to that day where we'll find other parties? I mean, independent candidates seem to be doing pretty good.
I think so. This is the only country in the world that has a monopoly, actually an oligarchy. It's the only country in the world that has this. So it would lead me to believe that, yes, there's a good possibility.
Now, you are running for a gubernatorial race in Maryland.
Right.
What do you feel that is so important about your candidacy?
Well, to start with, it's the first time that people have had a choice in over 30 years. That's the first thing that's important. Secondly, I think it's a watershed in politics, and I think it's a combination of the Internet, younger people. I talk to a lot of college people, a lot of young high school people. I think the realization that the present system is broke. We're talking about Morella and Van Hollen. You would need a micrometer to see the difference in these two people.
Oh. Interesting. Go ahead. What about the gubernatorial side?
Well, the gubernatorial side, you know, both of these people like big government. Both of these people don't mind using government to reward friends and punish enemies. Both of them see government as a booty to be passed around. I don't see any difference.
And how do you get around big government? I mean, there's going to be a bureaucracy. What government is all about is bureaucracy.
It's tough. It's what democracy...
I mean, the Republicans, am I right, Jim? The Republicans for years have talked about getting rid of big government.
Right.
And here we find even Ronald Reagan, who was the biggest advocate of let's reduce government, turned out that he has come about with big government back in the 1980s.
Ronald Reagan actually did a pretty good job of reigning government.
Yeah, he got rid of little people. He didn't get rid of big people.
No. His problem was he had a Democratic Congress
What about George Bush?
Well, I must say, you know, I'm
the senior.
Right. Oh, senior. Okay.
Yeah, he had big government.
You know,
Jerry, you're absolutely right. Under Reagan and Bush, they quadrupled the national debt. And you've got a president now, Franklin Delano Bush, down there that would make the original Franklin Delano green with envy at the farm bill he just passed.
Well, let me say, I strongly support the president, but could you imagine what it would be like if Al Gore was president today? Oh, my God.
Well, that's like saying, you know, would you better be dropped off a 100-foot building or a 500-foot building? I really don't think it makes any difference.
You know what? With the 100-foot building, you have a shot at living. With the Democrats, not maybe not.
Dana has...
I would just as soon go to 500-foot, and I know it's...
Wait a minute, that, my friends, is why we left the Libertarian Party.
Wait a minute, Spear. Let's get a Democrat in here.
Well, Spear sounds awful Republican this morning. I'm a little bit shocked. However, when we have nothing to say, we try to go towards old figureheads in the Democratic Party. Let's talk about this election. Let's talk about the fact that not only is there momentum, but let me talk about the Cook Report. Charlie Cook, a national famous pollster, came out and said, hey, listen, this race for the Republicans and the Democrats for the House is tied. And the Democrats actually have a little bit of an edge, and the president is not helping the Republicans at all. And by I mean helping, I mean the American public, there is no coattails there. No one in 1994, not one political pundit or talking head said, let me tell you something. Not only are the Republicans going to take back the House under the control of Newt Gingrich, but they're going to win by 54 seats. No one thought that would happen.
Okay.
And I think that it's the same kind of momentum that we're having
okay,
here.
Okay, Spear Lancaster, yes. You have 10 seconds to give a rebuttal and say
Dana,
goodbye.
Dana wants to talk about the current candidates. Let's talk about the current candidates that supposedly run a boot camp where hundreds of kids were brutalized. And we know this because we paid them off. Have you seen anybody brought before a grand jury to be indicted? Where's the responsibility of these people?
You're talking about Ms. Townsend.
Yes, and I'm talking about a $1.7 billion. She was supposed to be sitting in while this was going down. Who's accountable for this?
Okay, thank you very much, Spear Lancaster. And I will not say Spiro Agnew. Spear Lancaster, I got it straight. Is that okay, Nicholas? Okay.
You got it right.
All right, Jim Homily.
Let me say, Dana was just talking about the Cook Political Report, and I'm looking at the Post here, and Amy Water, the political analyst from them, says, and she notes here, the 10th crystal ball champ for the Post. The crystal ball competition is something the Washington Post does every year. You need to read the Post.
I know it does. I'm talking about a national figure.
And Amy Water, but one of his political analysts is listed here saying the Republicans are going to have 223 seats. The Democrats are going to have 211. That's a solid majority for the Republican Party, and that's why
in the House,
and that's why with a solid Republican majority there, I think it's important for the voters of Maryland to have a strong, committed person like
but
Connie Morala in there.
That's status quo. It's the same thing.
But see, the Democrats, the only argument that they have to throw Connie Morala out in the street is they're trying to sell this idea that she's going to determine whether you have Democrats or Republicans in control of the House. That's simply not true.
Right.
I hope everyone will vote for Connie.
Our telephone number is 301-230-0980. #980 in the Verizon wireless system. Absolutely free call. I have lines open. And, you know, people, I've talked to a lot of people who say, you know, politics, I can't get into it. Candidates, you know, throw the bombs out. Remember the book that came out 10 years ago? People are saying that. But the fact is that this is our American way, and we have the right to do it, and that's what's so much fun.
And Jerry,
lines are open at 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon wireless system. We are talking with Eric Mickelson, Green Party, Jim Pomeroy, Dana Jones, along with Nicholas Sawalk, who's over there throwing pens and pencils at people. Anyway, I want to turn to my Green Party friend, Eric Mickelson.
Sure, Jerry. How's it going?
Fine. thanks for joining the show.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I think that the point that that Jim brings up and that Dana brings up, they all make sense. I think, you know, the issue is vote for the person who is most in line with your own ideas and the issues that you believe in, and go out and do your civic duty on Tuesday.
Okay, let's talk to a caller, Roger in Oakton. Roger, thanks for holding.
Good morning. I'm glad you finally got around to something really interesting. Listening to Steny Hoyer was about as boring as watching 4-hour enamel dry.
Well, he was a guest on our show, and we respect him for that.
He was a good guest.
But this is the American way to have your opinion. I love it. Go right ahead, Raj.
I want to talk about this referendum over here in Virginia that's going to take place in the Northern Virginia area on Tuesday.
Go right ahead.
The taxes that we are paying over here in this Northern Virginia area is just unbelievable, and I'm hoping that maybe some of our folks here listening to you today that are on the fence will remember that in 1986, when the current sales tax was raised to 4.5%, part of that money was supposed to go, if not all of it, was supposed to go for transportation. And I still am looking around to see where that money was spent on transportation, and that's been since 1986.
Was it allocated for the way, Jim?
Oh, Roger, and I can tell you where that money went. Governor Warner took all of that money this year, and he put it into non-transportation items. That was a dedicated tax for transportation, and they diverted the money to other items. Just last week, they took a dedicated tax, a rental car tax in Arlington and Loudoun, dedicated money, and they took it out of the transportation fund, and they switched it over to non-transportation items. They do that every year. So whenever you have a dedicated fund in Virginia, the government can transfer to other things, and that is one of many reasons why people should vote no on the sales tax hike.
But the one thing they didn't have, Dana, kick in here, please. But the one thing they didn't have at that time was what? A transportation committee or board.
Well, they have.
But they now have one.
We've always had one. They are just setting up a second one,
exactly,
specifically for Northern Virginia, which
as the overseers of the tax referendum.
But there is no enforcement.
This tax. What would happen to the money? How long would it be before it would be spent? Where would we be able to see the results of this if they passed it?
Governor Warner even admits it would probably be 2 years. Even if the money came back up here, it would be probably about 2 years before they even saw the first shovel of dirt turned. But here's the problem. We're talking about a $300 a year, $300 to $350 a year tax hike on the average family of four in Virginia. And the Washington Post backs me up on those numbers. And that is outrageous to have to pay that additional money when a lot of it's being diverted anyway downstate.
Dana, this is a bipartisan situation. It's not Republican-Democrat. John Warner, the Senator John Warner, is certainly on board with the governor.
And I think that tells a lot. I mean, if this was an issue that wasn't right for Maryland, I seriously doubt that the senator would be behind it.
Well, it might be right for Maryland. It's not right for Virginia.
Excuse me, Jim. The lady's speaking. Go right ahead, Dana.
I'm talking about the senator from Virginia, actually. From my understanding, also, since this has been such a concern regarding money going down south and not staying up north, as Virginia continues its quest to just become two different states, I believe that there's been promises made and restrictions put in so that the money wouldn't go down south, so
right,
it would stay here.
Just
so
like last time.
So it is a half a penny tax for a better for less traffic.
Okay. Dana, can you make your answers? I can't see you, so can you make your answers kind of short because we've got a lot of calls coming in, okay?
Okay.
All right, let's go to our callers, and let's talk to Steve and Bowie. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I just recently moved to Maryland yesterday from Virginia, and I'm a black conservative, and I'm really quite disgusted that there's really no one to vote for as a black conservative. I'm very strong on moral issues, and I look at the Republican candidates. I normally vote Republican because I tend to lean towards with similar values, but in the state of Maryland, everyone is pro-choice or pro-abortion. And big government, tax and spend, a lot of issues that I don't even see a real difference between the Republicans and the Democrats in this state. So I'm really grappling, like, do I vote at all?
Let's go over to the Libertarian and get an answer.
It sounds a lot like you're a Libertarian, sir, and I'm glad to have you in Maryland. Spear Lancaster actually probably would be.
Here we go. No. The gentleman is
actually
talking about
Jerry. He can't vote in Maryland this year because he just moved yesterday.
Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
I registered 2-3 weeks ago, before the deadline.
Okay, well, good. Okay. Well, please vote Republican. But I was going to say, I was hoping I could get one more vote against the tax referendum, because if you had just moved and hadn't changed your registration, you're legally entitled to vote through the next election cycle in your original state.
Okay.
A little election trivia for our listeners.
Nicholas, I was calling on you to answer this gentleman because he was saying that he was dissatisfied with Republicans, which he
and
is a Republican,
Democrats.
Conservative, he said, and Democrats.
Right.
And
especially
in
Maryland.
When I hear
no
people
difference.
Like that, I always think of them as going libertarian. That's the reason I called it. Not to sell Mr. Spiro.
Well, because the thing is, and you missed his name again, but the thing is that the real energy in this election in Maryland this year is coming from candidates like Speer, like Linda Shade in District 20, candidates that are coming from the outside who mm-hmm. aren't career politicians, who are energizing not the voters that the major parties want to vote, but the youth voters, the disenfranchised voters, the people who are dissatisfied with their options.
Okay, very quickly,
well,
Eric.
What I'd like to say to Steve is, even though I don't necessarily share his political views, is that, you know, I'd like to encourage him to get involved in the process maybe in the next election. Maybe he can consider running for office. You know, it's a civic responsibility that a lot of us think, you know, we take very seriously.
Let's talk to Marlene in Elk Ridge, Maryland. Good morning, Marlene.
Good morning. I'd like to preface my comments by stating that I am a lifelong Democrat. However, KKT is not an attractive candidate for me.
Why?
And the reason that the thing that really put me over the fence was last week she was on a talk show on Hopkins University, and she made an unbelievable statement. And the host gave her an opportunity to correct that and to clarify her position, but she maintained her position.
What was the statement?
The statement was that, in her opinion, a rich minority should have a scholarship before a poor white person. Well, I guess if KKT was on the board of University of Maryland, I wouldn't have gotten in there.
Hmm.
Okay. My second comment is regarding Dutch Ruppersberger.
Mm-hmm.
Dutch Ruppersberger is got to be the most, to any property owner, has got to be the most offensive candidate that's ever come down the pike. I'd like to remind Dana of his attempt to evoke eminent domain. Now, Essex is on the other side of the world to me, but that could be my property next.
Dana?
He seems to have no regard for personal property. And if I was voting in that district, I'd definitely be voting for Helen Bentley, who has already served in Congress and is for the little person and opposed the NAFTA treaty that took jobs to other countries.
Okay, Marlene, let's get Dana on the line. Dana's her answer. Dana?
Well, thanks for calling in, and I appreciate your views. Hello.
Can you hear?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
With Dutch Ruppersberger, I think that the issue of Proposition 509 has truly, from a legal standpoint and from a legislative standpoint, been pushed into this huge eminent domain. He's coming into your home and taking your property, which just simply is not true. If by reading the bill, which I think you can still find on the Maryland State website, this was property that was almost condemned. And he was trying to, as well with all of the other legislators up there, trying to fix up the neighborhood, trying to revitalize. And by doing so, the bill wasn't right. The community perhaps did not want that. And so it went to referendum. It was very simple. So, he has served Baltimore County for years. He put 265 cops on the street. He has brand new neighborhoods.
Okay,
so kicking people out of their homes in pursuit of revitalization is no vice? I don't think so.
Nicholas, well, I don't think you just heard me, and I'll repeat myself for you, but that wasn't kicking people out of their homes. That is a
invoking eminent domain to take away homes from people that are living in them because you determine that that area needs to be revitalized, and giving those homes away to developers to redevelop is kicking people out of their homes.
And the issue is, it wasn't a little bit of community support. These people had to get like 40,000 signatures in the course of 3 months, which is an enormous amount. I mean, it was a groundswell of support. And, you know, again, it was clearly an inappropriate use of eminent domain, and it was to expand the definition from, you know, slums or degraded housing. That was part of the bill.
Jim Pomeroy, one of the things that Marlene brought up was this whole codice at this university, Hopkins University. Where was KKT coming from?
Well,
with that statement like that?
I mean,
it's certainly not affirmative action
right.
She's talking about.
And
let's make that clear, because we had this debate before a couple of weeks ago on this show, that it was not affirmative action.
I'm not as familiar with her position on that, but I just think we need to move toward a colorblind society, and that if we can get there, we're not going to have to worry about these quotas. I think that the quotas in the end are counterproductive.
Dana? Dana?
Yes.
Yes. Were you listening?
No, absolutely I was. And I think that, yes, the KKT ticket is for equal opportunities.
Okay.
Washington Post, the Baltimore Sun have both endorsed her.
All right, let's go to the cell phone. Tim's standing by. He's so kind. Tim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, my question is a general question from one of the younger folks. What my concern is not the the process itself. I guess what I'm more concerned about is the output. For instance, once again, you know, we didn't pass the budget. We had professional career politicians, and they get paid very well to do the job, much more than I make. And once again, another year goes by, and they haven't done their functional job. So really what I'm concerned about is not who's aligning themselves with what particular party and how much they're getting paid and all that kind of stuff, but why don't we have as a metric job performance, basic job performance, like if you're getting paid to pass a budget to run the country and you can't do it, why are you still employed?
Tim, I don't know, I guess you want to hang up, but Tim is showing a barometer here of what I've been saying for a long time in a lot of my commentaries, you know, both on Reporter's Notebook as well on television, as well as even on this show, and in my discussions with people, that the younger voter is showing something new, going back to what you were saying, Nicholas, as well as Eric, about the other parties involved. Young people want to talk about issues. They're not talking about alignment with parties, Jim.
Well, the problem is, I mean, you can ask the same question, why don't the Redskins score in every play? And that's because people are playing defense. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat in the Congress, somebody is always opposing your views. And that's the way democracy works. And I know it's frustrating. It's frustrating particularly to be on the losing side sometimes on those issues. But the give and take between two parties, three parties, four parties fighting over issues is actually healthy. It's painful to watch sometimes, but it's healthy to hammer out the best position.
But the thing that Tim brings up, and the reason that people are so frustrated with the process, is the major parties actively pursue keeping young voters out of the process. They actively pursue keeping the number of voters down to a limited group of people that they can control.
That is so
and
true.
I just spoke
at a rally sponsored
very
by
quickly,
Virginia,
Jim, very quickly.
The Virginia Young Republicans yesterday. The whole purpose of it was to turn out young voters to oppose
exactly.
the sales tax hike.
Where was
exactly.
the last campaign ad addressed to young people?
The issue is, and it was in the Post. There was an article in the Post last week about, you know, the percentage of people who are, say, over 50 or 60 who vote being, you know, almost twice as much as those who are, say, under 25 or 30. And, you know, so it is kind of a chicken or egg situation. They, you know, the parties or the candidates want to focus on the people who they think are going to turn out to vote, and so they aren't particularly paying to young people's issues.
I'm sorry we didn't get Mary from Hughesville, Maryland, because that's a nice place to be from, and plus that's Steny Hoyer, who was earlier on our show. That's part of his district. But anyway, Mary, if you want to call us back, we will, as soon as we get you online, John tells me, I'll punch you up because I have a favorite thing about Hughesville, Maryland. You know what I mean? It's not too far from Benedict, Maryland. Anyway, Maurice is on the line in Silver Spring. Good morning, Maurice.
Hi, Jerry. In addressing to Jim Farmley, I'm always interested in, as an African-American, always interested in Republicans' rhetoric about colorblind society. And you look at the situation.
Maurice, can you turn your TV down a little bit?
Yeah. Okay. And you look at the, you know, the situation that we participate in here. And we find that it's not because we're all in
Now, Maurice, I got to have you turn your TV down because
I'm getting
we run into some problems.
And you should be listening
to
the
broadcasting
show.
Another, huh? Let's just, okay. There you go. All right, go right ahead, Maurice.
You know, and it's not because we have a plantation mentality that 11% of African Americans are voting for Bob Earl. We look at his voting record. We look at the excuses that Republicans come up with for opposition to affirmative action and other programs. They seem to still be telling us, as African Americans, we want to move towards a colorblind society and wait, and it'll get right, and people will get decent, and people will realize what's wrong. And I think that we don't want to hear it.
Okay.
Would you agree, sir, that things are not better now than they've ever been in that area?
Well, I would agree that we're better, we're further along than we were, but we're nowhere near where we should be. And to hear that, I mean, there are quotas. There's like an African-American seat. You think that the next Supreme Court justice, if he's the most qualified African-American, is going to be appointed? No. Clarence Thomas has the Thurgood Marshall seat.
And he's very qualified to be on there. Even if you don't agree with what he says.
I'm not saying that he isn't, but I'm saying that I would bet you dollars to donuts that is the African-American seat, is what I'm saying. People talk about quotas, and there's a quota. There's one African-American on the Supreme Court, and there will be one African-American on the Supreme Court. Freeman.
You know what? Actually, sir, I really believe this. If there is another I suspect that George Bush will appoint another minority, perhaps another a non-white candidate. I would say it is very extremely likely he will appoint a non-white candidate to the Supreme Court, perhaps another black justice. Now, it may be a conservative
black justice.
Yeah, kind
of like all the minorities in his cabinet. Anyway, I really think
that... Hold it. He has... the people making foreign policy in this country are African Americans, and the president and a number of African Americans, much more than, say, you know, our previous presidents. I mean, look at... George Bush has picked a number of folks. You know, talk about a cabinet that looks like America. George Bush's cabinet looks like America.
Well, now, I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice. I mean, these
and Harry Belafonte.
The only thing is, who's running our State Department?
Let's go to
Nicholas. The only question I'd have for Maurice is, where does that get you to determine that there is only one African American seat on the Supreme Court, or determine that there is only a certain amount of space for, you know, people of color at the table? Where does that get you in life to say the system's stacked against us? We got to put a law in place to fix it.
I think I believe in everybody. Very happy that Maurice called in, and because this is the kind of opinion we need people to call in and talk about, because now we have two people on the round table, two white males, telling Maurice he's wrong, which I just absolutely get a kick out of. Maurice, your experiences are wrong, and let me tell you as a white male what it really are.
Let's go to Bill in College Park. Hello, Bill.
Hello?
Hello, Bill. Go right ahead.
Hi. How are you doing?
Fine.
I just want to make a few comments. One is about, you know, giving young voters a chance to participate in the process.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
And part of the problem is, you know, we have very restrictive ballot access laws, and they're also trying to push through campaign finance laws that are probably just going to make that even more restrictive for other people to get in on the process in terms of other political parties.
Okay. Well, And you have a comment?
And then we also have people who are talking about affirmative action, the previous caller. And I think that just seems to be unfair. That shouldn't be anybody's decision but the company who they hire.
Okay. All right.
Let me remind everyone.
Thank you very much for your call, Bill.
Let me remind everyone that you can make history on Tuesday by voting for the first African-American lieutenant governor for Virginia.
He's a Republican?
Yes, he's a Republican.
Oh, my.
The very first, if you want a black lieutenant governor and a great hard-working man.
Don't go there. Somebody, a former panelist on this show,
vote Michael Steele.
Michael is a nice guy. You know what I mean? When he showed up on the show, he was great.
Jerry,
gentlemen, we got about 4 minutes. Am I correct, Mr. John? We got 4 minutes. I want to go around. 3 minutes. Very quickly, folks. 3 minutes. I want to go around the table, and I'll start with Dana. Dana, you're on the line. Tell us about the outcome of the two tight races in Maryland, the eighth district and the governor.
I feel very positive about the Kathleen's campaign. I think it's very promising. I think that's the kind of leadership that people in Maryland want.
What about the 8th district?
The 8th District, I do feel that the qualified candidate, Chris Van Hollen, will pull ahead. Connie, again, as we said many times, is a very nice woman, but it's not going to be her.
Thank you very much, Dana. Have a good one on the campaign trail. Let's talk to Nicholas of the Libertarian Party.
I just want to remind people that, you know, don't get frustrated with the system. Get out there and vote. Remember, politics isn't a horse race. In a horse race, if you pick the winner, you get some money. In politics, if you don't pick who you believe in, you get nothing.
Oh, my goodness. This is the day of cliches. I mean, anyway.
Well, Eric, I've already made my predictions in the race, but I'd like to speak to the last caller's point. In Maryland, actually, they just passed a study bill for public financing of campaigns, which would really open the political process up to outside candidates and people who aren't necessarily part of the machine. And so if you are interested in that sort of thing, talk to your House, your delegate or your state senator, and ask them to support public financing of campaign in the future.
Jim Pomeli.
Enough is enough. Taxes are too high. The special interests are pouring too much money into these races. If you're tired of that, if you're tired of special interests and big money telling you what to do, vote no on the sales tax hike referendum. Vote no to send our money down to Richmond. Vote no on that, and vote no on Kathleen Kennedy Townsend.
I want to know
please
the outcome.
Vote for the small government folks. Vote for the people who are going to protect your money. Vote no on the sales tax hike. Vote for Connie Morella. Vote for Bob Ehrlich. Vote for Michael Steele, please.
Okay, now.
Paid for by Parmalee.
Yeah. Don't say that, please. Please don't say that. This is a public affairs show, and we don't.
That's why we have Dana.
There's no money on this show. Right. It looks like the turnout is the most important thing in a word. Nicholas, you think it'll be a good turnout?
Yes, I think that.
Eric?
I hope so.
Jim?
I think it'll be a good turnout.
Okay. That's about it, guys. Thank you very much. Dana, thank you very much. Certainly, our politicians will be back next month crying about all of the predictions they've made. It's just like going around trying to tell everybody who's... Well, anyway. Eric Mickelson of the Green Party, Jim Parmalee of the GOP, Dana Jones, Democrat, and Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. And thank you very much, everybody else that called in and helped us out. Hey, I got to get out of here. Next week, the credit, the games of credit, debt, and spending too much is the topic of our financial fitness program, and doctors will answer the concerns on Doctor's Call. Thank you those who helped to put it together. John Miller is our technical producer, Courtney Layden, our administrator, Quentin Jackson, public affairs assistant, and Steve Solomon also with us, and may I say our simulcast operators, Paula Casey. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips, Metro Talk is a Big 100 and Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation. Much peace, much love.